Welcome to the Open House Podcast. Conversations exploring life, faith, and hope. Discover more interviews at openhousecommunity.com.au.
Father Patrick McInerney is a Colomban priest and head of the Colomban Mission Institute. He's very involved in the cause of interfaith dialogue between Christians and Muslims. He's working to break down barriers of prejudice and misunderstanding. He believes the most important way of doing that is to make friends across the faiths, for Christians and Muslims to get to know each other and then address shared concerns. It was in pursuit of that goal that this Catholic priest caused a bit of a flutter in recent times when he attended a service during Eid at the Lakemba Mosque in Sydney. In doing so, he was following in the footsteps of none other than St. Francis of Assisi, about whom a new film has just been made, recording the time when St. Francis went to visit the Islamic religious leader during the Fifth Crusade. In this interview, we discuss that film and the whole interfaith question, which certainly has its detractors. But before that, I asked him about the response when he visited the Lakemba Mosque.
It was very interesting. It was quite pleasant. It was a bit strange, of course, a Catholic priest walking through a street which is thronging with Muslims, and yeah. Sort of, what's this man doing here? And one man kindly asked, you know, are you lost? You know, is prepared to help me find my way. But I went to the mosque, and another man greeted me there, and he said, welcome. And I said, I'd come here to say some prayers and find a quiet spot. He laughs. He says, you won't find a quiet spot. So I walked in and just stood at the entrance, and the room was full of men. There was a separate section for women. Mm. And I just found my way to the back of the room. I found a place against the wall and sat down on the floor and just spent some time there.
And why did you feel it important to be there?
It was just an opportunity to show solidarity. It's a presence of a representative of the Christian Church. It is an important night for Muslims. That night was the 27th night of Ramadan.
And of course tonight is the night of Eid, another important, very important occasion.
Yes, Eid of course celebrates the end of the month of Ramadan, the beginning of a new month, and it's a time of people coming together, of sharing meals, of happiness, of celebration.
Hmm. So now I understand that you're particularly involved in interfaith dialogue in Sydney and around the world. You're aware of what's happening within that movement. But the fact that you were at a mosque must have raised some sensitivities, I suppose, because it is just a few days after there was an attack by a non-Muslim, by a Christian man, as far as we know, on a mosque in London, apparently in response to the other attacks that had taken place during the previous week. So there's great sensitivity in that community, isn't there?
The Muslims at the moment, I think, feel a barrage of negativity. Many years ago, a few years ago now, a friend of mine, a sheikh, described the feeling. He said, we feel as though we're under siege. That's all the negative press that comes up after one of these incidents of violent terrorism. Another friend, who's a counselor at a school, I asked him recently, you know, what's the feeling among the students? And he used the expression, it's like a silent scream. You know, we're not being heard. You know, we're being misrepresented. Who we are is not being presented to the public.
And if they were able to articulate that scream, if they could be heard, what would they be saying?
They would be saying, I think, that Islam is a godly religion, that it promotes peace, that these acts of violence and terrorism and criminality are contrary to our teachings, they're contrary to the explicit texts of the Quran, they're contrary to our Islamic principles, they're contrary to Sharia. So in that sense, they have, technically, have nothing to do with Islam. But of course, they're being carried out by people who are using and abusing the name of Islam and the good reputation of Islam for their own twisted purposes. yes, criminal there, violent. Sometimes there's histories of social misbehaviour.
Well, and at the core of it, though, there is a truth to it, that there are groups, one group in particular at the moment, that is Daesh or Islamic State. For them, one imagines that it's a matter of reclaiming land that's rightfully theirs, or reclaiming a place in the Islamic world that's rightfully theirs, and then that extends, using some of the teachings of Islam that one could point to in the Quran, to a hatred of non-Muslims. How do you unravel that, I suppose, is my questioning grown to you?
Yes, well, that's a complicated question, and it would take some time to unravel. But I'd just like to say that the so-called Islamic State has been clearly, officially, and at length repudiated by a collection of Islamic scholars who've written an extensive repudiation of the basis that al-Baghdadi claims for the so-called Islamic State. And of course, what that state does is, like calling it an Islamic State, what it's doing is contrary to Islam. It's not Islamic. Yes, they do reference texts of the Quran, and they do reference Islamic sources, but they take them out of their context, and they therefore misrepresent, and they're actually violating Islam. They're violating the tenets of Islam. They're acting contrary to the Quran, even though they're making that claim themselves. Because yes, precisely this type of misrepresentation, yes, that is so painful to the Muslim community, that who they are is not able to get through. So that's why it's so...
Yes, and that's the reason for my question. Certainly on this program, we do want to get to the truth of things. If it's the case that a propaganda war is preventing us from actually relating to our neighbour in the street, then that's a dreadful crime against all of us.
It's a violation of the Eighth Commandment. Thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbour.
It's self-evident, isn't it, that if you walk into your culture, you come out of the door of your mosque, you come out of the door of your Muslim school, you walk into your culture and people are shouting things at you, or maybe, you know, abusing your mother because she's wearing a hijab, or all the things that happen in the street, then that's not going to help you to feel that you are part of a society where everybody's valued.
Yes, that's true, of course, and that's what makes it so difficult for members of the Muslim community. And I think that's why it's all the more important that we show solidarity, that we be present. That's why it was important that I went to the mosque. This morning, Eid morning, I was at the mosque again. I was part of the celebration there. I attended to be a Christian presence and to give greetings on behalf of myself, my colleagues here at the centre, and in general then in terms of the Christian community.
Well, I've got to say it's important work, but you're in very good, you're following in very great shoes. Tell me about the time, so, and this was one of the reasons we wanted to speak with you tonight, St. Francis himself, in the Fifth Crusade, during the Fifth Crusade, so we're now talking about the 1200s, off St. Francis goes with a view to trying to convince people to stop fighting Muslims, and with a view to trying to bring, effectively, the message of Jesus to the Islamic world.
That's correct.
On the surface of it, it looks like a foolhardy undertaking, doesn't it?
It's astonishing. It's it certainly does look foolhardy. It was obviously at some risk. But yes, at the time, at the height of the Fifth Crusade, at Damietta in Egypt, when the two armies, the Christians were besieging the town of Damietta, the Muslims defending the town, in the height of that conflict, St. Francis arrived in Damietta on a mission of peace. And he crossed he and his companion crossed the no man's land between the two warring armies, and he was taken into the presence of the Sultan, and he spoke, and he said that he came in peace and that he was a Christian, and made his case. And he was a holy man, and the Sultan, being familiar with the Sufi traditions of Islam, respected holy men, and actually gave him permission to preach to his court, which is quite astonishing. We don't have any historical records of what actually transpired in the conversation, but we do know that it did take place. This is historical. This is a fact. It's an astonishing fact of history, largely unknown, that at the height of this bloody conflict, two people of faith came together and met face to face.
What was the effect on the Sultan? Do we know that?
Well, there's one thing that we do know for certain is that Francis was unsuccessful outwardly in his mission. He was allowed to return to the Christian camp. The battle was prosecuted again, and in fact the siege was broken and the Christians were victorious. And then the Christian army was marching towards Cairo, and they camped in the plain, but not knowing the local geography, they didn't realize that they actually camped in the floodplain of the Nile. And so when the waters were released, the Christians were swamped in this floodplain and up to their knees in mud and dying. And here's the astonishing thing. Instead of taking advantage of the misfortune of his enemies, the Sultan provided food for the Christian army.
Gosh.
He fed them and kept them alive. He provided food for their horses, for their animals, and kept them alive. And this was such a magnanimous gesture that it shattered entirely all the propaganda, war propaganda rhetoric of the wicked Muslims, the Saracens, how terrible they were. He was a man who'd shown such generosity and kindness and mercy, so that when a peace treaty was created, it endured for many years afterwards, just because the propaganda was no longer credible. The Sultan had shown such magnanimity, such generosity.
And is it your view that he did that because he'd had this encounter, this dialogue with St. Francis, notwithstanding that that battle was later prosecuted anyway?
I think it must have had an impact. It would have been also from his own following of Islamic teaching that he would have done this as well. We have to acknowledge that. But I'm sure the fact that these two people met face to face, it gave a human face to the other, so that the other is not just the enemy, but it's a person with a name. And I think that's what's crucial in this, that there was a face-to-face encounter between two people of faith. And I think that's why this film is so important for today, when there are stereotypes and myths and prejudices and fear and suspicion. No, we are not in a situation of civilizational war, as was the time then, Christendom versus the world of Islam. But it certainly is a time of hostility and animosity against Muslims and against Islam. And that's why this is so important. We need to meet people face to face so that it's no longer just the other, but it's a person with a name. It's someone that I know.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely right. You know, early on in our time, when I was at Christian Schools Australia, we decided as a group of schools, the organisations around them, that we were going to reach out to Muslim and Jewish schools and hold a symposium that would celebrate the fact that in our society, each of these great religions was freely able to run schools and teach their kids in accordance with their faith. Mm-hmm. Now, we met together with those other faiths for some months and eventually held the symposium. There was a lot of interest in it around Australia, I can assure you, including a group which denounced both me and my organisation for being, quote, in bed with the devil. Now, I imagine that's the kind of hostility that you encounter, is it, from other Christians sometimes?
Sometimes I get a little bit of attempted correction. I'm told that I'm ignorant and naive, but I would rather be foolish in the cause of goodness rather than being stuck in fear and being afraid.
Yes.
I think we just have to overcome that. If we're true people of faith, we can't be afraid. And we can't be afraid of our Muslim neighbor. We have so much in common. We need to build on that. We need to overcome the fear, the negativity, the suspicion. We need to build relations, build friendship, work together for the common good.
One of the things that we agreed when we started meeting together with our colleagues from the other education sectors was that we weren't going to pretend that we were not different religions. We weren't going to pretend that there was some single mashup of God. In other words, we were not going to syncretize. We were going to respect each other enough to not just not go there.
Absolutely. When you come to interfaith, you must come to it with the integrity of your own faith and your own tradition. It does not help at all to wash it down, water it down, to minimize. Of course, I am a Christian. I proudly confess my Christian faith. I acknowledge a Trinitarian God. I acknowledge Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior. I make all the traditional Orthodox Christian confession. And I expect Muslims to come to me as authentically Muslim.
Yes.
That's how we meet each other, not as some blend or some mishmash. That doesn't help anybody.
And let's deal with one other question that is sometimes asked. If you reach out to your Muslim brothers and sisters in Australia, does that necessarily mean that you're actually excusing the fact that Christian brothers and sisters in other parts of the world are being martyred?
Not at all. We don't excuse that at all. We must be equal across the board. We oppose violence in all its forms. So I have mentioned Central African Republic. There are cases there where Christians have defended Muslims, given them sanctuary in a church, against their fellow Christians. In the Philippines, there are instances where Muslims have given sanctuary to Christians who are suffering from the attacks from what's happening in Mindanao. So in both cases, there are good stories and bad stories. You know, there's good side and bad side there. And what we need to do is just to be just and equal across the board. So when the attacks by ISIS and ISIS-inspired things are reported,
yes,
it's often in the name of Islam. But when the attack, which you mentioned, was it Finsbury Mosque?
Yep.
Presumably by a Christian, it doesn't get referenced as a terrorist attack. You know, and Muslims see the double standard, and they feel that as well. So we have to find the right language to talk about these things, because terror does not know religion or creed or nationality. It cuts across the board. And our reporting of it should also be non-discriminatory. It should be equal treatment, that everything is called by its right name, that it's murder, that it's wrong, that it's criminal.
And if it's murder, then it's not of God. In anybody's language.
Exactly.
Yeah.